I don't have any...
No, it's just for the audit recording.
Excellent. It's working then? All right. Thank you very much. I'm terribly sorry that I was late this morning and I missed Jason's presentation and the beginning of Carsten, but what I heard at the end was really insightful. I'm glad to be here. Thanks to Carsten to have invited me. My name is Annabelle Gower. I work at Imperial College London in the Business School. And I've been doing research on the topics of technological platforms, most of them in the digital world, although not all of them, for over 10 years now. And I understand today's workshop is trying to focus on business models, and that we have a very exciting group of people coming from different companies, both from software, hardware, mobile, different functions, different firms, different ways to look at how value gets created, how value can be captured. So I'd like to say something hopefully relevant to this kind of setup, although I'm sure you have thought about these ideas in your own way before. Because the word platforms is often used and rarely defined, and because I know from experience that even sometimes across companies it means slightly different things, I think it may be helpful to try to define what I mean when I use the word, so at least you can follow what I'm trying to say. Industry platforms are technological building blocks that can be technologies, products, or services that act as a foundation on top of which an array of firms organized into a set of interdependent firms, sometimes people call that an industry ecosystem, develop a set of interrelated products, technologies or services. I say firms, but obviously what I mean here is organizations. When we have an organization like Open Source Movement, it's not one firm, but a collective of actors tightly organized. So examples would be the iPhone, the Internet, the Wintel platform, video games, mobile phone operating system. Some examples, you know, we all know about Facebook, Google, the iPhone, Windows operating system, and perhaps because I have three little boys, I trip a lot on Legos in my house. And I think a lot about platforms, so it was bound to sort of one day say, isn't a Lego a little bit like a platform? Because if you think about it, it's a building block. It's got interfaces, which are those little, what's the word in English? In French, it's plots? The little round dimple type things, which are finely calibrated to be sure that the top of a Lego block fits tightly, although not impossibly hard to disentangle for a child. And this picture here shows that even if you've got some very fixed criteria of the design, there is also some dimensions of variability. One is, for example, the length and the width of the block. Another dimension of variability would be the color. So a limited set of dimensions where you can have some variety, limited set of dimensions that ensure connectivity. And what do we see here? From far you may not realize it, but this is actually a town made out of Lego. This is a sculpture made out of Lego, and this is a Lego artist. This is just to illustrate that with very, very simple building blocks and a well-thought-through way to connect, the sky is the limit as to what you can actually build with these building blocks. So I find the metaphor of Lego, although obviously there are very important differences with the platforms that we are looking at, I find it's quite inspiring to think about how the platforms that we are trying to understand share or not some of those characteristics.
I also know he's from Denmark.
That's correct.
That's another quality of
it. Shall I assume, therefore, that you're Norwegian?
No.
Platforms. I'm not just digital, I just want to say this briefly, but I think it's worthwhile recognizing that you can find platforms and you see industry dynamics, platform dynamics in a variety of industries. Obviously computers and internet, telecoms, electronic payments, media, consumer electronics, but also in transportation, in retail, in energy, and in biology. These industries share some common features. These are complex systems. The evolution of the technology is rapid. Oops. The question of interoperability and integration is important, and it requires the collaboration between several firms. Right. So, because I think about this as an academic, I'm trying to strip down, all the complexity of the phenomenon just to zoom in what are the important forces to understand, as a first-order analysis, what drives the phenomenon. So I've been, as I said, thinking, working theoretically, but very much so with companies over the 10 years, now almost 15, on these topics. And I have a few publications in this area, some of them more oriented towards a managerial audience, some of them more academic, some of them were translated in Japanese and Chinese. And the recent book which just came out in paperback is actually an edited volume. There are 14 chapters, there are 24 contributors from 19 universities, and the whole field of people who are trying to think about platforms, and Carsten is certainly one of the leading figures in this field, is growing and growing rapidly. And it's easy to understand why just your very presence today demonstrates, if it needed to be, just how important it is and how we are thirsty for ways to really get to the heart of the matter. Because we still don't really understand what's driving what, but we all impacted in a major way. As users of the digital infrastructure, as individual users, when you're 7-year-old, say, how come I don't have an iPhone yet? You work for a company whose business is, was great until yesterday and may be dying tomorrow. And the point that Carsten, you were making about how value is relative and how no advantage is really so. The degree of competition between layers and how what was a complement yesterday could become a substitute tomorrow. These are very, very important forces that we are affected by as individuals, as employees in organizations as well. So platforms have appeared in many industries. When they emerge, they alter industry dynamics and innovation dynamics. Innovation doesn't quite happen in the same way. We've seen that when they emerge, giants can be toppled, like Microsoft and Intel did to IBM 20 years ago. By and large, we seem to witness an increase of the intensity and the diversity of industrial innovation in business ecosystems. Although I will have a caveat here that I don't believe that just because there's been so much innovation happening in this space over the past 10 to 15 years, that means that there was no useful or important innovation happening in other contexts. And I think that I'm talking about this in the context of an intervention I have been asked to do at the European Commission as part of the Digital Agenda Assembly, where the Commission is thinking about mandating in a preemptive manner all firms that are significant. Significant is less than dominant, although it's not exactly clear what significant means when you start being significant. To disclose interoperability information, which on the face of it sounds great. Everybody wants more transparency, more competition, what could be bad about that? And I've been developing an argument that things aren't quite so simple, and that there is a trade-off between competition and innovation in complements within an existing architecture that we take for granted and where we want the interfaces to be open, and perhaps less visible these days, form of innovation, which is a systemic innovation. An innovation that we architect, an overall system, those innovations that, for example, led to the creation of the IBM 360 computer, those innovations that actually led to the emergence and the creation of the Internet, those who become the infrastructure that we, again, take for granted and on which we witness this extraordinarily exciting flurry and flourish of modular innovation. So I would like to say that I am not an advocate or a religious person about platforms or a fanatic. And I think that's quite important, especially for academics who do not have a complete an interest vested in one way of competition winning over another way of competition, to keep our cool and not become carried away by our own concepts and become fanatic about, say, open innovation or other concepts like that, which develop a cult-like movement, which is, you know, perhaps not the place where academic research should go. So network effects, we all know about what they are. Momentum accrues, that accrues market power to platform leaders as their market share grow. So I'm sure most of you have been familiar with this slide, which was taken from a book written by Andy Grove, then CEO of Intel. His way of describing the evolution of the computer industry, whereas in the late 70s, you had a competition between IBM, DEC, and Wang, a competition based on computer systems. If you opened up a computer at that time, if you opened the box, you would see very different way of linking the different modules of this computer. The system architecture would actually be distinct between these products. When a possible potential consumer would decide which of these computers they would buy either an IBM or a DEC or a Wang, and they would get a different box. Okay? Fast forward 10, 15 years later, what you see here is a more fragmented industry structure where firms such as Intel, Motorola, AMD, and Cyrix are specialist microprocessors firms. They actually compete between each other, and at the different layers, you've got more specialist firms, Microsoft, Apple, and Linux, which I qualify here as a firm for simplicity, middleware, more firms, and then interestingly, in the application software, you see some of the usual suspect Microsoft there as well, but others such as SAP. So what this slide is saying, and this slide could be interpreted in many, many different ways, a couple of interesting ways to look at this slide are to say, just because you have a complex physical system, or even it could be a digital system, system made out of different components, does not necessarily mean there's only one economic structure of production for this system, right? I mean, this is a computer, right? In this way of organizing the industry, you've got a very different kind of competition between specialists, right? And the integration then happens between firms at arm's length. Right? So the governance of how this whole thing works about integration, how do they make sure that their piece fits onto their other piece? And a very important question is, as well, how do they coordinate when they want the whole thing to evolve? And if you're quite content for the interfaces here to be stable forever, and you're limiting yourself to innovate internally and just make your particular microprocessor faster and faster, with never thinking about changing the connectors between your piece and everybody else's piece, that would be fine. However, we all know this is not what happens. What happens is, for example, for Intel, which is a firm that I, way back when I studied in quite a lot of depth, there came a point where their capacity to innovate on the speed of the microprocessor became so big that in effect, the pipes, the connectors, the bandwidth of those connectors that linked their piece, the microprocessor, to other pieces of the computer became, as they said, stinking slow compared to what they could actually do. So that they were giving me this metaphor that the microprocessor was like this room, and what they did in the microprocessor was process data that arrived into the room. So they said, what a microprocessor does is it runs to the door, opens the door, lets the data in, processes it, and sends it out. They said there came a point where we would run to the door, open the door, there was nobody at the door. So they finally realized they got to do something about the width of the corridor that brings people or data into the door. And that's when they started to engage into this, at the time, rather unusual effort to, you know, create standards such as what they call PCI and USB. And many people get sort of lost into the technicality of this and don't quite see why it's so relevant. Why it's fundamentally important is because what you saw here was precisely one of the specialist firms being directly impacted by a problem that required coordination. Usually coordination happens within firms. That's usually why we've got firms as opposed to market. I thought your story about the marriage was a fantastically insightful one. Because there are reasons why in society you've got marriages. You know, if what you want is a quickie, there are lots of other ways to get it, right? If what you want is a long-term investment into an uncertain future, over the years and the decades and the centenniums, humanity has figured a way that actually there are some situations where commitment seems more appropriate, right? Let's move into understanding the economic organization of the environments we operate in. There are reasons why there are firms as well as markets. If it was always optimal to have spot transactions, you would never have firm. You have people who would go at the corner of the road every morning and say, have you got a job for me? And actually there are industries that are organized like that because it may be more optimal given that particular type of activity, right? For this kind of activity that require huge bets, risky bets, long-term investment, difficulty to know exactly who's and how we're going to capture the value when it gets created, markets historically have proved rather dismal at that. And for those of you, because I understand most of you are in the mobile industry, just look at the difficulty in Europe and the US of a market such as mobile banking to take off. Just think about the NFC technology, the near field communication technology, which for those who don't know, a little bit like the Oyster card, where you sort of wave your card to a reader, and then that gives you access to something. That technology can be used to pay and to get access to places just on your mobile phone. And you can just imagine how excited many companies are, from handset manufacturers to network operators to banks to the cooperatives, Visa and MasterCard, to just have a piece of that pie, which looks succulent and delicious. And it's very interesting because I've done some work on this industry. Because the question is, how come it's been several years, about 7-8 years, that the whole industry is saying, it's going to happen. It's happening next year. It's huge. Benefits are great. We're all investing. There's been hundreds of millions of dollars invested in this industry. It hasn't taken off yet. If you look, however, in Japan, where it's a much more integrated structure, where basically NTT Docomo went out and bought a bank, because that's Japan and that's what we do, right? And we can. And you know, mobile banking's been happening for years. The name of Sony, Felica. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that we should all adopt that kind of industry architecture, but I'm just using the NFC mobile banking example to point out the real difficulties of coordination in innovation, in market, where, again, your complementary of today could be your competitor of tomorrow, in particular in the digital arena, which Carsten was describing, where the boundaries are very malleable, are very easy to move, and where, therefore, the risks of a cooperative relationship, which would require disclosure, and interoperability information, and allowing you as a, say, complementary firm, not just to know how to connect, but to know how to use information that's on the other side of the boundary. How the vulnerability is real, and how those questions are very strategic questions, which are hard questions, and which would be very important to understand more finely. How much time do I have? 5-6 minutes, okay. Okay. I think I said most of what I wanted to say, so I'm quite content with that because I know that we're going to have the rest of the day to interact a little more. I'm just thinking within the next 5-6 minutes, which of these, you know, 10 slides will I present? So maybe this one. What we know about platform dynamics. Platform emergence affects industry dynamics. Positions of industry leadership get challenged. The structure of the industry changes from tightly controlled supply chain to loose coalitions of complementors. The nature of competition change away from system-based competition towards component-based competition. I think it may be useful to frame the competition as going away from a competition between firms to a competition between coalitions of firms. Now, the content of those coalitions is shifting. It's like a shifting geography of alliances. It's as if you look at the map of the world and the blocks continuously get changed. You used to be part of Europe, now you may be part of South America. You know, That's the kind of work we are looking at. The nature of industry innovation changes also, and it does focus innovation trajectory on complement. And new strategic opportunities arise. One of them is to try to be what we call a platform leader, to try to exploit the benefits of open innovation, tapping into the innovative capabilities of external firms or individuals. There are lots of unanswered questions. I'm not going to look at them now. I will have very quickly another two or three slides just to present the ideas to you. If now I put my strategy hat and I say, okay, I work in a company. Being a platform leader sounds great. They seem to be making a lot of profit. How do I get there? How do I know if I've got what it takes to even start that game? I think it's a pretty legitimate question. And we have studied lots of companies in different industries, and we've come up with two preconditions. These are preconditions in the sense that they're necessary but not sufficient for a product, technology, or service to have platform potential. Does it perform a function that is essential to a technological system? So think about your body as a system. If you get into a car accident, God forbid, you know, one of two scenarios may happen. Your arms get badly smashed, and, you know, we may have to amputate. Terribly sad, but you can still live. Or if your brain stops, or you got some really bad hemorrhage in your lungs, or your heart has a big problem, you're probably dead. This metaphor is to say that just because you've got interconnected elements doesn't mean that they're all just as important as everybody else, right? So one test as an engineer, say, how do I know if my piece is really essential to the other piece? Well, try to take it out or if it fails. What happens to the overall system? Does it collapse? Is there any use out of it for users or not? That's the way to start. Another one, does it solve a business problem for many firms in the industry? Two are not necessarily correlated. But that's a very important point. And what we've looked at with my colleague, Michael Kusumano, who is at MIT, and who used to be my PhD advisor, is that many firms make the mistake of either looking at just the technology aspect of things and neglect the business aspect of things, whereas others make the exactly diametrically opposite mistake. They only look at the business aspect of things, and they don't realize the implication it's got for how they should design their products. This is the kind of truth that seems obvious, that takes a split second to say, and that plagues so many companies for very deep reasons. Individuals specialize in their own skill sets. They evolve into professional areas. You know, you're either an engineer or you're a market development person. It actually is your identity. The rift within organization between these groups is usually huge. The language used is often not even the same. I've been lucky enough to start my life as an engineer, you know, and then go back and add another 7 years of study in the economics management world, you know, so that I can speak both languages. Very few people have had the opportunity or the inclination to engage into that kind of double language. And that has consequences today in our high-tech industries, which are profound. Because one probably key idea about learning strategically to play this game of technological platforms is to be conversant in both design and technology, as well as economics forces, business organizations. So my very last slide will be, no, I have one slide when I'll talk and one slide that I will just present and will not say a word about it. We'll leave that for later. So one very simple idea, which was at the core of our first book, was to identify the four areas of decision making that managers have to take into account in a cohesive manner when they want to have an effective platform strategy. One would be the firm that is making decisions whether you make the compliments or not, or when you let others make them. The other one would be how you design the product technology, and it has to do with the degree of modularity that you put into the design of your system, and just how open you want your interfaces to be, as well as where you put them. The third would be the relationship with the complementors and how are you treating them as competitor or complementor. And in the many cases where actually you have to deal with them on both dimensions, that leads to the fourth dimension, which is how do you internally organize and incentivize your own people to have a semi-functioning relationship with external stakeholders that play both roles. Okay, so I thought there was a lot of value, and many, many people thought that there was value into identifying the fact that these variables had to be taken into account in a cohesive manner, right? And the last slide I will so that implement that process coherently, and the last slide I will just leave out there, and I'm happy to give more detail later on during the day, is a more recent paper that we had in the Sloan Management Review, where we say, okay, that sounds great, the four levers, but concretely, what do you do if you are a firm that is a wannabe, we call it a wannabe platform leader? I'm not there yet. I want to become a platform leader. What concretely do I do? So we have a set of actions, both, as you see, as I keep saying, the technology has to be done in parallel with the business. So a set of technological action to consider, as well as business action to consider. To, one, core, be successful at coring, which is creating a platform where none existing before. And two, tipping, which is imagine that you're not the only platform, but there are others. How can you win a platform's war? So these are suggestions as to address these two questions. Thanks for your time. Sorry for going overboard.